All right, great to have you back with us. Learned a lot from Bob Walk in that interview. As Giants and Pirates game two, Will Crow on the hill against Kevin Gausman for the San Francisco Giants. We bring in Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. Bruce, how are you this Saturday?
Doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
Pretty good. It's an exciting time of year, I think. Number one, we had four games in L.A. that, you know, you look at the history of these two franchises and things are happening that never happened before. And you kind of relive 1951, 1962 with these ninth-inning comebacks. I thought it was a very, very exciting week of baseball. What's your perspective on what happened in L.A.?
Well, it was so significant and so interesting, top to bottom, so tightly contested, and so in favor of the Giants when it's all over, and they win three out of four, that last night, you know, I really didn't think it meant anything. You know, it wasn't a great game by any means. They made a couple of errors, and it was this sort of a natural letdown, I think, after that amazing series. I just think it was the kind of thing that lasts, has a lasting effect for you, and just, you know, rewarding in so many ways. I mean, the Dodgers, they still looked a little shocked from that last night. They took yet another one of those horrible losses to the Rockies this time. Bases loaded, nobody out, needing a run, and three guys strike out. I mean, you know, there's a real trend in progress right now that the Giants are red hot and the Dodgers are struggling. Who knows if it lasts, but I just thought that series in L.A. was really, really important.
You know, Bruce, it seems to me the Giants are getting better, and they're a tough out. Every at-bat, I don't care who you put up there, every at-bat is a tough at-bat.
Yeah, I remember in the good years when they were trailing in the ninth inning, you really had a feeling that they'd at least get something started and they wouldn't go quietly. And they didn't go quietly last night either. He got a little bit going there before they went down. And, it's a real sign of character. And that's something I don't think that sort of thing fades away, especially because they have so many guys. I mean, they've had so many injuries, it's almost comical. And you're seeing guys in there that you hardly even recognize, at least at the start of the season, you know, Wade and Vosler and Casale and Trump and who knows, you know, new pitchers all the time and Jackson. I mean, but they all sort of get caught up in a really good thing that's going on there, and no one guy carries a load. That's for damn sure, and it's pretty inspiring.
I wanted to stress to everybody today, and I did it in my opening. Look, there's a three-game lead on the Dodgers, four in the loss column, and the Padres are, what, four and a half back, a number in the loss column as well. But there's 65 games to go. You know, if you're up three with five to go, you can get excited. With 65 to go, I mean, a trillion things can happen in baseball, and that's really where we are. So that's my perspective on the week. It was a great week, and I think the Giants are getting better, but I think people have to relax and realize there's a long, long, long way to go.
Yeah, I don't think it's a kind of excitement like, hey, we're in, you know, bringing on October. I just think it's a real satisfaction to know that the manager's doing a great job, the coaching staff's doing a great job, the players are give you an entertaining game every night, and there's no reason that can't continue. Now, whether they're going to win the thing or even get in the playoffs, who knows, but there's just a real promise for, you know, don't miss these telecasts or don't miss getting a chance to get out there because it's pretty cool.
You think they have to make a deal here, or could Farhan say, you know something, I know we're getting in, but it could be a one-game playoff. We've got the best record in baseball. I think we're okay. I don't think we have to bust up the chemistry. I think Dickerson, Ruff, Wade, whoever you are, I think we can do it with you. Do you think that they could actually do that and not make a deal?
Absolutely. I think Farhan's going to look into deals, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does one, but I think he's in a position to where if it's not exactly right and there's no desperation to it, I absolutely think they're in a great spot to continue with what they have. And, you know, the more prospects that they keep, they're obviously not going to trade Bart or Luciano, but, you know, guys like Canario and Jelly and all these guys in the minor leagues, Matos, you know, that have a lot of promise too. The more of those guys you hold on to, the better shot you have at continuing what they've got going. And, you know, I'd hate to see a prospect like that given up for a rental pitcher who's only going to help you for a few starts. And it's a great spot to be in. Whereas I think the Dodgers, they have to do something. You know, Kershaw's hurt. Bauer may never pitch for them again. Their bullpen is ridiculous right now, just really preposterous, except for Treinen. And they definitely need to do something. And I think if they don't, the Giants will be very happy, and their Dodger fan base will be very upset. But I really think if Farhan doesn't do anything, I think the fan base would be just fine.
You know, I agree with you. I really do. And I sort of said that a month ago, and I've kind of come around that, well, maybe they need something, someone to help Rodgers and McGee. So you just don't have those two. If you're lucky enough to, you know, get into October and win a round, that's a lot to take you through the whole month of October without having some help. What do you think about Jansen, though? How about the meltdown? He went one inning complete against the Giants, seven hits, seven runs, and four walks in one inning over two nights.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch. And disheartening if you're any kind of if you have any kind of sympathy for him, which I don't actually, but I mean, I've never found him particularly likable. Very, very tough, but you know, it's his time is coming now. You throw 1,000 cutters, you know, over 2 years, and it's going to catch up to you. But he was so wild. He's just out there in a sweat, and the fans are just they're all over him. And Dave Roberts is shifting around in the dugout, and he doesn't want to take him out. He doesn't want to make it clear that he's exasperated with Jansen. He wants him to succeed, but he didn't. It's just two games, but it was pretty telling. I certainly wouldn't put a bounce back past Jansen. I don't think his arm's falling off or anything, but that was wild. And you know, it seems like every reliever they throw out there, except for Treinen, is just overmatched. And even Jansen right now, and he's overmatching himself because he can't find the plate.
You know, next week's fabulous. Three games next week. And I think these two teams could meet. I really do. Whether it's a playoff of one game or if it's, the wild card team, and more than likely the team in the West is going to have the best record in the National League. I think they're going to meet again. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the Dodgers do. If they go out and get a Kimbrel or someone like that, because their bullpen, it's a game of bullpens, and their bullpen is trouble. Two of the best at-bats of the week for me, the Flores home run, which turned the 2-1 deficit into a 3-2 lead. They eventually won 4-2. And then the rough at-bat, where we'll remember 2021 forever for those two at-bats.
Yeah, Ruff was really good in L.A., and, you know, he got a big break on that check swing. But he was really hanging tough. He wasn't trying to go deep. He was just trying to spank the ball somewhere, get on somehow. Amazing. You know, I've always liked Vosler. He looks like a really good hitter. And then he gets in that situation where a base running play becomes a big deal. You know, that's why this series was so great, because, you know, there were a lot of home runs hit and everything else, but there were so many little things that make the game great that came into play. You know, that, oh, my God, there's McKinney in right field. His arm looks actually bizarre. You know, what's going to happen there? You know, and he came up short a couple times. And just so many great things that had nothing to do with the true outcome or everything that people are upset about. Made that series especially good. But, yeah, those were great at-bats, and they sure had a bunch more.
You know, I talked to Orlando Cepeda this week, and I said to him, Orlando, what makes this team so good? And he said, sound baseball.
Yeah.
And that summed up everything we're talking about. They play sound baseball, whether it's the pitching, the hitting, the fielding, the base running, whatever it is. They play. Now, they didn't last night. We saw them, you know, make a couple of mistakes last night. But that's what he said, sound baseball, and I think that sums it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's remarkable. I mean, you take Crawford out of the lineup for 10 days, and you're thinking, oh, man, this could really go bad. I mean, they don't bring Devon back up. They stick Estrada out there, and he did have one misfire. But basically, he's been really solid out there. He's playing sound baseball. You know, Dickerson in left field is certainly no ballet artist, but he plays sound enough. You know, Tauchman plays sound enough out there. Yaz is very sound, and then you get, you know, once you get Longoria and Brandon Belt back, my goodness, and Crawford, you know, with Posey, then it gets even more sound. So
good,
yeah,
good time of year, good time of year. Posey had a big hit too, of course,
a couple,
before Flores's home run. You know, here comes Posey, and he just took what he could take and smacked it into right field. The one thing about Posey's whole career that I'll remember are his hits to right center or right field.
Absolutely.
I think whenever he wants it, it's there for him. Isn't it something?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think the number one Posey hit is the ball he hit in Cincinnati off
Leitos.
That was a dead pull into the next stratosphere. But yeah, for the most part, that's what really separates him from the field, and especially from catchers. You know, there's a lot of catchers who are pretty good hitters, but I don't know how many of them use the whole field like Posey does. And he's just an artist. I mean, you almost expect it from him. But Kruko was telling a story the other night when Posey got his first look at it. It might have been Aroldis Chapman with the Reds, and he was throwing like 102. And the first one he saw, Posey just hammered it. I mean, he's just he's a very, very good hitter, and it's so good to see it coming back to the four this year. What's he hitting, like 330? I mean,
yeah, 330.
No accident, yeah.
No, he's the best of his generation. I'm convinced of it. Although I will say this about Yadier Molina, he was pretty funny last night or the night before. When Kim came off the mound in between innings, he checked him. He checked his hat and his.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It was interesting. Last night, they had a big spot, and Wainwright comes up to hit, and they go, what the hell? They still had Molina on the bench, but he had a really sore neck, and he couldn't hit, and Wainwright wound up taking the at bat and striking out. It's a big deal. Without knowing what was happening with Molina, I'm thinking, what's going on there? But it turns out he was kind of unable to give it his best shot.
Yeah, funny guy. And, you know, that series, and we didn't talk about it because Sunday was a game with LeBlanc, that he really nursed the Cardinals staff through that game. He was Carlton Fisk. He was Gary Carter. How many times did he walk out to the mound? And he didn't care about mound visits and the numbers and all that. When his guy got in trouble, he just took he actually took his time and took a slow walk to the mound to talk to the pitcher. I loved it.
No, absolutely. And they've got some advertisement now for the mound visit. I forget what it's called, but they should call it the Molina mound visit in honor of somebody who really goes out there with a purpose and, you know, gets some stuff done. And by the time he gets back to the plate, things are going to be a little better than they were before.
Hey, the Baseball Writers Association of America, the Career Excellence Award is what they call it now instead of the J.G. Taylor Spink Award, which you and I have talked about for years.
Yeah.
That's tomorrow. And it's a TV-only event, but Dick Cagle and Nick Cafardo get the awards. Of course, the late Nick Cafardo. Very briefly, Bruce, your thoughts on those two?
I didn't know Dick too well. I did see him at all the World Series I covered every year. Never got a chance to hang out with him, but I saw a lot of Nick Cafardo. I was a lot closer to the Boston Globe guys, you know, Gammons and Shaughnessy, and when Steve Fainer was there. And then Nick was – he's just I don't recall. He was never not there. I mean, I don't think he ever took a day off. Like even in January. I mean, he kept that Sunday column going. That was a source of pride for him. The Sunday Boston Globe baseball notes has been an institution since Peter Gammons instituted it way, way back in the 70s, and it caught on all around the country. But they were always the best at it. And he, as you well know, we would talk about his items on Sundays while he was still with us. So that's. That's a very big loss, and an extremely nice, humble man who would never think about talking about anything he's ever done. You know, he was really in awe of the guys who came before him, and rightly so. But I think he also knew that he was a rightful heir to what had come before.
Yeah, he was one of the first to acknowledge Bochy. I remember he used to do the list of the best man. He always had him at the top, and this is before, you know, before Bochy became Bochy.
I remember that.
Yeah, Nick was all over that. Then, of course, he didn't have him ranked highly in the most handsome managers. So.
The big head category, he was always up there at the top.
Right, he would do that. And then on the Frick Award, Al Michaels, we haven't talked about him on the show too much. Of course, he was here. You know, he did the Reds and he was here with Lindsey Nelson, I think. And, of course, the Hawk goes in with him. And we have that interview with the Hawk after you today.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself. I won't be able to hear that. I love Hawk Harrelson, but I first became of Al Michaels in the 70s. NBC used to bring in a local broadcaster to join one of the, you know, Kurt Gowdy or whoever, to work the World Series, and here comes Al Michaels from the Reds crew, and he was extremely good. And next thing you know, he's working. I think it was just one season, but he worked radio with Lon Simmons out here. And you talk about and the team was just horrible, and they didn't pull any punches. They, with great humor attached, they let you know just how badly things were going, but they were so funny about it with such perspective, and they came from such a perspective of knowledge that it was totally legit, and it was very, very entertaining, which, I mean, what a plus when you can't wait to hear the broadcast when the team's about to lose 8-2.
Great baseball voice. Great baseball voice.
No kidding.
And what is he known for? Do you believe in miracles?
A hockey call, yeah.
Really? That was taped.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, it's a good – I love it. I'm glad Cooperstown is doing it this weekend, and then the other presentation for the four who are going in will be September the 8th. So I'm glad that's happening. The Cleveland has a new nickname. It's no longer the Cleveland Indians. It's the Cleveland Guardians. And I've been waiting all day to ask you your opinion on this, the Cleveland Guardians.
Well, the best thing about it is that the last five letters are the same, and it's sort of the same cadence. Indians, Guardians. Exactly why they take that is a little bit bizarre. I mean, it's a bit of a reach. On the bridge there, the Hope Memorial Bridge, I think it's called in Cleveland, there's these several enormous statues that stand to their guardians of traffic. I don't know. Who knows exactly what that means? It's sort of like guardians of the city pride or something like that. It's very, very vague. And every time you hear, well, here's why they do it, I still can't understand why they do it. I still haven't heard exactly why. But I'm not offended by it. I think after a while it'll be okay. I was wondering if they'd be called the Clevelanders, like the Philadelphia Phillies, the Clevelanders. It's a little awkward, but well, it's not awkward off the tongue, and it's bizarre. But I tried to come up with one. Did you come up with one on your own that they should have done?
Not really. No. I just was, I remember the Spiders and the Naps and, those teams and all
that.
Yeah,
those don't work. The Spiders is too creepy for some people.
But, it's funny. Yeah, I don't know. When I saw the nickname and heard it, I said, I have no idea what it means at all.
Nobody knows, and nobody ever will know.
And then when I heard
the guardians of something.
Right. Then when I heard the explanation, I still didn't understand what they're guarding.
Right.
On the bridge, and one is holding a Conestoga wagon, and another one is holding some other relic. And to me, you could have done better. It could have been a little bit more exciting as to, representing the city of Cleveland and the hard work. And, I hate to say it, but it's to me it sounds like a fringe political group. I hate to say it. It's kind of crazy, but with all the things going on in the world today – they're the Guardians. The Guardians of what?
A fringe political group.
Yeah. I don't know. So
yeah,
I think they could have done better. Bill, I'll ask Bill. Bill, of course, knows Toledo quite well and knows Ohio. Bill, what did you think?
Yeah.
Hey, I was an Indian one year, Marty. 1988, I played for
Were
the
you?
Indians.
Okay.
Yeah, and Chief Wahoo would not be smiling when he heard that nickname just now. They gave him the Guardians. Chief Wahoo, he was the chief on your hat, had the big smile on his face. But, the Indians have been such a name for that organization for so long, and it was just terrible. They had Tom Hanks talking about it, and nobody understood why he was even brought into that. But it's just a name, of course. Names are going to be changed, and that's the issue here. I want to throw both you guys into a complimentary way to a couple guys in our bullpen, the Giants bullpen, who's really been throwing the ball real well. Jay Jackson is one, the big right hand, who hasn't even given up an earned run this year. He didn't even give one up in AAA, and he's been – so solid from a right-hander. I don't think he's even given up a hit yet. And then on the left-hand side, Alvarez and Garcia have just been lights out. Both these guys have just been dialed in. Your thoughts, both of you guys, on how these three guys are really stepping up in the bullpen?
Well, that just shows you how fluid a bullpen situation can be. I mean, when they were trying out Doval and Santos and that wasn't working, and the guy who went to the Dodgers, I can't even remember his name now. But Jackson comes in. He comes in, strikes out Will Smith, Bellinger, and Pollock. Mm-hmm. In Dodger Stadium, Yeah, he's faced 14 guys and he hasn't allowed a hit. He's struck out 8 so far, and he kind of looks the part. Alvarez, you're right, has been really, really good, and so has Garcia. You know, Leone is a little down after last night, but I mean, Marty, you were talking about, are they going to be able to supplement Rogers and McGee? And right now, they definitely are. And you know, maybe Sam Long fits in there. There's a lot of good things going on with the pitching staff. You know, Logan Webb looks like hopefully he'll just be there to stay. And it's such a crucial thing. And it's good timing, assuming these guys can stay on a roll with the Dodgers coming right up here for some more of that.
Well, there's nothing more beautiful when you get a lefty that makes it. Whether we go to Javi Lopez or Tony Watson or Jesse Orozco, Sparky Lyle.
Gary,
once they make it, boy, I'll tell you something. They are something, and they are both locked in right now. Garcia, especially. Leone, you know, he got in big trouble last night. Garcia bailed him out. That could have been even uglier. And Alvarez comes in and he gets his guy. So the lefty thing for me is okay. The righty thing I worry about, because who is Jackson? What, is he going to go the whole year and never give up a hit? I mean, come on, he's like 33 years old. At some point, someone's going to figure this out, and you don't want him to figure it out in September. So I think from the right side, they still can use some help from the right side.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're obviously not going to say, well, they solved that with Jackson. I mean, it's only a couple of outings. It's of course, it's very, very promising, but you're right. I think they've seen a lot more of Garcia and Alvarez to think that they really might have something there. And, you know, it's such a hallmark of the great teams with Lopez and Affeld. Yeah. And You really have to have it.
Yeah,
well, that was very beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, when the lefty clicks, boy, that's a weapon out of the bullpen. And I think they've clicked. I really do. And you put McGee in there. Look, if they ever got Kimbrel and you had McGee in the another lefty. But then when you get to the playoffs, you only need a few starters, and then maybe Logan Webb becomes the right-handed guy in
the bullpen.
And he could do that.
Well, yeah, he's showing a knack for coming right out with phenomenal stuff, like right out of the gate, which is what you need to have. Yeah,
and the Farhan may say, "Look, I don't need to get another. I got Webb, and I think we can still win the division with Webb as a starter. And if I need him in the playoff, I can put him in there." So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple of good historical notes today, July 24th, 1951. Bruce, this is a good one. Willie Mays makes a barehanded catch off Rocky Nelson to save a game, and Branch Rickey says it's the best catch he ever saw. How about that?
Yeah, well, when Mays was in the Negro League, some of the guys who remember those days said that fairly often he'd just catch the ball with his throwing hand if it wasn't coming at him like a locomotive, or take it on the first bounce barehanded just to get a little bit of an edge. And then this game you're talking about on the Polo Grounds, It was 457 feet to left center. And when you imagine Mays out there, what a gift from God to have him. I'm sorry, this is at Forbes Field. This is in Pittsburgh. It was 457 feet to left center in Pittsburgh, and Rocky Nelson of the Pirates, it's this thing, and Mays has his back to the field, and Whitey Lockman, who was a teammate of Mays, said, "If you know that Kevin Mitchell play that he barehanded play that he made, this was better than that." And Whitey Lockman said, "Oh my God, that's not human what he did. Just dead run back to the plate, a lot like Mitchell, but a lot more ground to cover, and just if you can imagine, even more spectacular, just ridiculous, Mays."
Yeah, and Branch Rickey, look, he said that's the best catch you ever saw. Of course, the great Branch Rickey. 1961, mm-hmm. And I mentioned this to Orlando the other day when I chatted with him. Rain wipes out home run derby. Now, this is 61, and the Giants come back to New York. It's an exhibition game in Yankee Stadium against the Yankees. But before the game, it's Mays and Cepeda against Maris and Mantle. And
it gets
rained out. The Giants end up winning the game. They do play the game, the exhibition game, 4-1. And Mickey Mantle hits a home run, and Willie's got two RBIs. But Orlando said, well, he wanted to do that one so badly, but the rain knocked it out.
Yeah, it was a good thing they did get the game in. That was a game that they called the Mayor's Trophy game, as you know. It was, and they played it every year. It went back to 1946. It started out at the Polo Grounds. So all of a sudden, you got the Yanks and the Giants. Of course, there was no interleague then. You didn't see the other league until you got in the World Series. So you got the Yanks and the Giants going at it. It was a best of three. They'd spread it out over off days during the season. Started in 1946, and it went on and on into the 50s. And you're looking at DiMaggio and Mantle, and Koufax got in there eventually, and Duke Snider, and they drew some big crowds for some of the games. And they did get in a home run derby in 58. I found out it was Mantle, Yogi, and Bill Skowron against the Braves, Aaron, Matthews, and Adcock. That's a good one.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Oh, it's great. It's great. And last one here from 1973, Bowie Kuhn finally did something right. He finally did something right, and he added Willie Mays to the All-Star team. And it was Willie's last National League All-Star, 73, of course. And Bobby Bonds has a big All-Star game. He homers and doubles in that one. But for Bowie Kuhn, thank goodness he did something right.
Yeah, I think that was originally about Nolan Ryan had pitched two no-hitters that year in the American League, and somehow Dick Williams left him off the team. And Bowie Kuhn said, well, we need to add another player from each league. Ryan would be obvious, and Willie Mays would be perfect. It was Mays' last year, and it rounded out. This is unbelievable. He made the All-Star team 20 straight years. I mean, no, not one year where he didn't make it. And because they played two games for a few years, he played in 24 straight. And as the great Ted Williams said, Mays was always great in these games. He goes, they invented the All-Star game for Willie Mays because he's leading off with a triple, he's stealing a base, he's homering, he's making a great catch. And he brought his A game to the World Series. I remember just couldn't wait for those games. Mostly the National League team was so great. And here's another thing about that 73 game. Here's the lineup. Rose, Morgan, Cesar Cedeno's in center for Mays. Cedeno's coming up, and Mays is kind of at the end of the line. Aaron, Billy Williams, Bench, Ron Santo, and Chris Spire.
Wow.
Spire at short from the Giants. Quite an honor.
Wow. Bill, you've worked with Spire a lot. He was special in the early 70s.
Oh, he was very good shortstop. I faced him when he was Montreal. He was up there for a few years, and then, of course, he had a great career with the Giants. He was one of those shortstops that did everything right, no glamour. He was just always solid, good throws, precise, and some great second basemen. Don't forget about the great Tito Fuentes.
Yeah. Yes, I just love the way Spire stood up to the plate. He looked like a hitter. He wasn't a Dal Maxwell or a Johnny LeMaster. He looked like he was going to do some damage up there. And he did get recognized. He made a couple All-Star teams. And, Dusty Baker's always entrusted him for years as one of his main guys in the dugout and the coaching staff. And like you say, Bill, just solid.
71, he was the shortstop as a rookie in 71.
Yes.
I mean, they had Hal Lanier who couldn't hit his hat size. And, and Chris Spire was a 71 shortstop. So, I didn't realize he was a starting shortstop for the National League that year. That's quite an accomplishment.
That is. That's a great thing.
Pretty good. All right. Well, that's a good one, Bruce. We've got tonight this young man, Will Crow, against Gausman. You think it's a setup for the Giants, but as I like to say, you got to play the games.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. We always joke how it'll be, Gausman will get ripped and Kidd will throw a no-hitter. But I really do think the Giants win tonight like 5-1.
No,
that's my call.
All right, have a great night. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning, early tomorrow. Thanks, Bruce.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Take care.
Bill, did you see Mays in the All-Star game? Do you remember them?
I was trying to remember that when you guys were talking, and, I was born in 57. I got to see a little bit on the black and white television my parents had. But, when you start remembering that, I was in the Midwest, and it was mostly Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris from Cleveland, and, of course, my guy Al Kaline. So it was more in the Midwest and East Coast I followed. And then, you start understanding Mays, McCovey, and all the other names as you get older, and then you start learning a game of baseball at an older age, and that's kind of where it all got put together. But, he was just fabulous and everything, and now, you get to talk to him. I get to talk to him. It's just unbelievable sitting there just chatting with Willie Mays some days. And his memory, Marty, and you know it as well, well as I do. It's fabulous.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And he tests me, you know, for stuff. And that's why we get along so well, because I'd hate to say it, but not many people know who Rocky Nelson is. And I seem to know that. And Willie and I kind of talk about that kind of stuff. I love him. Very special man. One of my big honors is I can't believe I got to meet Willie Mays. You know, I'm the kid from Brooklyn. Wow.
You did many events with him, too. You traveled with him. I remember all that.
I became his interviewer.
Those were fun for you.
Unbelievable. You know, who would have thought that? sitting in Ebbets Field watching the Dodgers and Giants play, that someday I'd be talking to Mays in that capacity. So he's very special and a very, very special part of Giants baseball. All right, we've got more coming up. Ken Harrelson is going to join us, the Hawk. This is pure gold, as I like to say, explaining his transition into broadcasting and things like that. I think you're going to enjoy it, and then we'll be back with more right after this on KBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.